Read me romance. Read, read me romance. Read me romance. Read, read me romance.
You could take a look in a book, that's fine. Or you could sit back, relax, and unwind and
read me romance. Read, read me romance.
Welcome back, lady listeners.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. It's Thursday, and this is the Read Me Romance podcast. If you didn't catch that after our jingle, it's Mel and Leah.
Yep. Alexa Raleigh's here with you. It's just us. Tessa will join us tomorrow. And until then, we're going to ask some stupid questions. So let's do it. These were sent to us, or they were posted in our Read Me Romance headquarters Facebook group. So this one was really cute. I wondered if you could answer it, though. What would your Real Housewives saying be? Does every housewife have a saying?
Oh, yeah. So, like, at the beginning, like, you get a line.
Oh, what would your line be?
Is
there a line you really like that the housewives say?
Oh, yes. There was one. God, I don't know if I'll say it right. God, now I can't remember.
Is it fuck bitches get money? Because that would be mine. Fuck bitches get money.
Get money.
Is it something nice? Like, am I not supposed to be funny?
Something like it depends on how your last season was. Like, I think it was something like, throw me to the wolves and I'll come back leading the pack.
Ooh, I like that. That's a good one.
Just stuff like that. Or life is about change. You got to learn to roll with it. Everybody's is different. And it changes each season, too.
I always think about James Franco. I can't remember what movie that was that he was in, but it's that gif where he says, they're just peanut butter and jealous. He says, they hate us because they ain't us.
I love that one.
That one's so funny. That gets me every time I see it.
I have that saved on my thing. Anytime somebody says something that they don't like or hate on something, like, hate us because they ain't us.
That's right. I love it.
And I just like the guy's like,
no, dumbass. Peanut butter and jealous. So stupid. Okay, so this one I thought would be fun. It said, if you ladies were to go on a wife swap. Do you remember that show?
Yes. Wife swap?
Okay, so if you and I did that with each other, what's the one thing rule you would make the other families follow during the week? What do you think you would do if you and I swapped, I guess?
I would...
I don't know. Like, I feel like you would come in and be like, everybody gets naps. Everybody gets to lay in their bed and eat in their room.
Yeah, I would be like, well, yeah, I think I would be like, you can eat whatever you want. I don't give a shit.
I would probably make everybody sit down and have a meal and they would be miserable. Your entire family would be like, fuck this. I'm out. Like, it would be absolute anarchy because I was like, I prepared a meal. We're sitting down. We're having dinner together and there's no food after this.
And then you'll be so mad because none of them will eat it. They'll just like sit there. They take 2 bites. They're like,
I'll come back to this later. They'll just get up and I bet they just get up and walk away from the table, don't they? They just walk away.
Yeah, they just walk away from it. They'll come and eat some of it later. They don't eat it at all. I just tell them, like, I'm like, I'm going to have food here at this time.
Yeah.
That way they don't eat, because sometimes I'm not there before they get home.
Yeah.
So they know if not to make too big of a snack, or they can make whatever they want. Or because I live next to my mom, too, so sometimes I have to text them. I'll be like, did you already eat at my mom's? Because my mom will serve dinner at, like, 5.
Yeah.
So I'm like, did you guys eat? Is anybody hungry? There's a group text. I swear it's just about food. I'm like, who wants food? And sometimes some are like, yes. And a lot of times they're like, no.
Well, I just wonder, like, I wonder how it would be for you in my house where my kids walked up to you, like, every 5 minutes. They're like, can I have a snack? Can I have a snack? And you were just like, yeah, yeah. Like, every time you just say yes.
No, I wouldn't say yes. So why do you keep asking me that? The pantry's over there.
That's true. You would. That's 1,000% true. Uh-huh.
But I don't have, they just don't, like, if you walk in my house, I have a display of cupcakes and candies and cookies, and they just don't eat it. They're just not, I don't know what's wrong with them.
What's wrong with your kids?
I don't know. They're just not foodies.
That was Olivia. That was a good question, Olivia. I actually like the thought of, like, going to your house and being like, okay, this is what we're going to do. And just seeing how everybody reacted to it. Because I feel like they would be that would be filmed on TV because they would be so dramatic about it.
You'd probably get really bored. You'd probably get really bored. But my kids are a little bit older because everybody's so independent.
Yeah,
like, the house is, like, quiet. I'm like, is anybody here? And then, uh-huh. like, pop, what? Did you need something? I'm like, just seeing if you were around.
Yeah, just seeing what you're doing. Hey, look at my face. Meanwhile, I'm like, shut up, leave me alone. God, you'd be out of here in like 2 days. You'd be like, I've had enough. You guys expect too much of me.
That's what I was going to say. My mom had one of my nephews over, and he kept bothering Peyton. That's how much they're even, like, they don't even want to, like, play, like, different things with each other sometimes. He's like, you're going to have to learn to play with yourself sometimes. I can't do this all the time.
No, he's, like, 9 years old. How does he say this?
He's like, you have to entertain yourself sometimes. I can't do this all the time.
Your kid cracks me up. He's so independent. I love that. That's a great question, Olivia. The other question that Trisha asked, she said, what is something that everyone looks stupid doing? And I've thought about this before, like when I've done stuff and I'm like, I probably look so stupid doing this. But then like everybody else does. But it's taking selfies.
Yes.
Like I feel like I probably look so stupid when I do it and while I'm doing it from the outside to other people, but I've just had to get over it because I like doing it, you know, and I like taking a picture. Like if, especially if I'm feeling myself, if I look cute, I'm gonna take a selfie, like suck my ass, you know, but I don't know. I thought of that one, but could you think of any more, like another example of something that you look stupid doing, but everybody else does too? Yeah. Like around your house?
I get up and I roam around. Yeah. I do it about every 30, 40 minutes. I just roam for a minute. Rob, my husband doesn't even ask me anymore. Because I'll, like, sometimes walk outside and walk back in. Walk outside and walk back in.
I could see that, because I'd be like, what are you doing? I would ask.
He doesn't ask anymore. He's just like, whatever.
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess that makes sense. What is some of your favorite romantic comedies? That's from Chanel. C-H-A-N-E-L-L. Chanel? I love that. We're going to have to use that in a romance book now because I really like that name. Favorite romantic comedies? Oh my God. I love romantic movies. That's the first thing I search on Netflix. If I have time and I get to watch a movie or something, that's I always search romance. But like romantic comedies, I'm trying to think of like some favorite like,
I feel like
love
it's
stories.
Big right now, but for some reason, off the top of my head, I can't think of it.
I know there's got to be. Well, I always think about what is it where they switch houses? It's not The Last Holiday. That's Queen Latifah. I do love that movie though, when she thinks she has like a brain aneurysm or something, but somebody just read the MRI wrong. And so she, like, goes on this, like, big epic vacation and, like, lives the life she always wanted to live and become a chef and all this stuff. And it turns out, like, she's not dying. I love that movie. That's so good. That's one of my faves. And I love how Stella got her groove back. I also love Waiting to Exhale. I love, like, revenge love movies.
I always feel like a War of Rose Reynolds makes me laugh.
Yeah?
Yeah. When I'm reading her, she gives me good chuckles along with her romance.
Yeah.
But rom-com is huge right now.
Yeah,
everybody's
for books and stuff. Well, they asked about movies, so
I thought you wanted books.
No, she said movies. Oh. That's what I was trying to think of, like, movies off the top of my head.
God, is like, the one with the moms, Bad Moms, does that kind of...
Oh, yeah, Bad Moms. Bad I don't know, does she find love in that?
Yeah, she
I've
did.
Never seen it.
Yeah. Oh, no, are they already together? No, she...
We write romance, okay? We don't have time to watch it. God damn it. Although, I seriously love, like, romance
movies.
Family
Stone is always my...
Oh, dude.
Is that comedy, though? It's got a lot of funny moments.
Which one?
Family Stone.
Oh, yeah. I do that. I would say that was a dark romantic comedy, yes. I also love the movie The Best Man. I love that one with Taye Diggs because he's so beautiful.
Oh, I love the one with Julia Roberts where she's trying... Where her best friend...
My best friend's wedding.
Yes.
Yes. I like that one. And I like the Runaway Bride. Is that it? Is that the other one?
Uh-huh. Runaway Bride. That's a good one. With Richard
yeah.
Kirk.
She's good with romantic comedies.
She is. Yeah.
So, okay. Well, those are some of those. Let me see if we have one more question we can do. Okay. So, Lainey, L-A-N-I, she says, which reality TV show would you want to be a participant in? So I know you had mentioned Real Housewives before, but would you ever want to be on that show, actually? Like, would you go as a participant on the show?
I don't know.
I know you love it so much. I don't know.
If I could. I mean, I've seen a lot of people. I think it'd be interesting as an aspect of getting a feel from yourself from a different point of view.
Yeah.
To learn
yeah.
from yourself. I think you can learn a lot from yourself and see, oh my God, okay. I need to change this about myself. But then I'm not sure I want the world to see that moment with me.
Well, and also, you know, in editing, you know, you can edit something to look completely different. I mean, I can't imagine that the editors don't sway, like, a viewer's perspective.
I think a little bit. But Bethany Frankel, Skinny Girl, that's how you would know her. She says you cannot, after all this time, you can't keep blame editing.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. I would do the Great British Baking Show. If I could be on any reality TV, I swear to God. Like, not only would I stare at Paul Hollywood's package the whole time, but I would definitely, like, get to eat and just feel good. And I'd love to compete, just to compete, because there's no money. Like, there's no prize or anything. You just get to win. And I like competition, especially just for the sake of competition. You know, when you throw money into stuff, people get nasty. So I like just being the best to be the best. I think that's awesome. So yeah, I'd get down with that for sure. That's it. All right, that's our questions. And I guess we're going to send them into the last chapter. I was about to say the last chapter, but that's tomorrow. We'll see you on the other side. Bye.
Sydney wants to wait until the next day to start, much to my painful physical frustration. Every part of it, from holding hands to him licking his thumb for the mingled taste of whiskey in my mouth, has me so hard that walking back to my room is uncomfortable, much less showering and trying to sleep. But like any good sadist, he wants me to choose his cruelty with a clear mind and after a full night's sleep. "Anyone might say yes like this," he told me before we rejoined the others. He gestured to the snow and the fire and the books. "It's easy to say yes like this." Meaning, I suppose, that it's harder to choose pain and shame while the sun is shining on every crack and flaw in the room. I admire his caution, although I admire it less as I burn alone between my sheets, because, of course, his only prohibition as my provisional dominant was to forbid me to come. Damn it. Luckily, the specter of Prosperina Markham, whoever she was, had Auden so agitated last night that he and Kremer seemed wholly unaware of what Sydney and I shared by the window. And when I bump into Auden in the kitchen this morning, he seems distracted, and not at all like he suspects I'm going to his library to be spanked by his art surveyor. "Everything okay?" I ask as I get some water. I'm too nervous for coffee, and I'd rather wait to eat until after Sydney's used my body. The young master of the house just pulls on his hair a little. "Everything's fine." He gives me a forced smile. "I'm fine." "Ah. Okay. Let me know if I can help with anything." "No one can help," he murmurs as if to himself. And then he tries a cheerful change of subject. "Should be a quiet day. Kremer left early to get to London, even though the roads are still terrible and the weather's too awful for the renovation work to continue. I'm planning on holing up in my study all day long to work, if you need me for anything." "And you're not going back to London for Christmas?" "My parents are dead," Auden says bluntly. So bluntly that I almost miss the glimpse of shy pain in his eyes. "And the rest of my life is complicated. I think I'm just going to stay here and go to Mass." "Mass," I say. I didn't expect to encounter another Catholic out here in the British countryside. "Are you Catholic?" Another forced smile. "Also complicated." "Ah." I want to ask him more. I want to ask him about Prosperina Markham and why his life is so complicated, but I also really want to be alone with Sydney, so I take my water and take my leave. The narrow corridor leading to the library is lined with arched windows, one side facing the front of the house and the driveway, and the other facing an inner courtyard with some lonely benches and a fountain. Everything is blanketed in storybook bluffs of snow, thick and white and blinding. But there's no storybook prince behind this door. Only a man with a snow-cold heart and a voice like ice. I can't wait. When I push inside, Sydney is predictably already at work. Today he's in another turtleneck and trousers, but his sleeves are pushed to his forearms, and I can see a large watch glint on his wrist. Next to him, on the table, are a bottle of water and a necktie, and next to those are his leather gloves, their presence both playful and ominous. "Close the door, Ryan," Sydney says without looking up from his work, "and put those door wedges against the inside of the doors so they can't be opened from the outside. Then come here." Last night, he came to my bedroom after everyone retired to bed, and he sat in the corner chair and made me answer all kinds of sordid questions. Did I like spanking, whipping, bondage? Did I like to crawl and beg? How did I like to be praised? How noisy was I when I came? What were the things I imagined when I jerked off that I didn't want anybody to ever, ever know about? Could I describe them in better detail? Would I move forward into the light so he could see my ashamed blushes as I did? We talked for nearly 2 hours, deciding in the common green, yellow, red system of safe wording, since Sydney admitted that he's not unaroused by discomfort and protests, and this would allow him to enjoy the occasional plea for mercy while still giving me a way to safe out. And we also decided on an adaptable but mostly full-time arrangement, at least for the next couple of days. After so many years as a body man, I find the idea of moving from power exchange to normal lover time and back again unnerving. I'd rather stick to the former and then have some grace and flexibility around the edges. So I already know as I approach him that I'll be safe, that he won't demand of me anything I'm not willing to give, and I can be present in the moment. I can be horny and vulnerable and excited and nervous and ready. I can just be me. "I'd like to work by the fireplace," Sydney says once I reach him. He still doesn't bother to look at me. "Will you carry my work over to the wingback chair?" He's uncomfortably beautiful from this angle. His hands, large but sophisticated, look like a lover's hands. The tip of his strong nose is caught with the morning light while shadows gather in the tiny well in at the top of his upper lip. He's the kind of beautiful Ash was, the kind Embry and Greer and even Auden Guest are. It's the kind of beauty that compels devotion, not because it's visually flawless, but because it promises untold mysteries beyond itself. The beauty is only a gate, a threshold to a secret inner world only a privileged few ever get to see. I arrange Sydney's work into batched piles, which I stack in perpendicular sections so he won't lose any of the organization he's done. I can see that he notices this and is pleased by my care, and that has me smiling as I set it all on the table next to the chair and go back for his pen and iPad. He's sitting when I return, his firm lips pressed together in fresh unhappiness. "It's not as comfortable as I'd hoped." "I'll get you a pillow for your back, Mr. Blunt," which is ridiculous, since a man as fit as Sydney doesn't really need a pillow for his back, but it doesn't matter why I'm moving around the room at his beck and call, only that I am. It's all part of the game we decided on last night, and it's almost unnerving how quickly the game relaxes me, even as it arouses me. The pillow's fetched, and then Sydney decides he's too chilled and makes me light a fire for him. And then he's thirsty. And then he's too warm after all and wants me to angle the chair away from the flames. "I think I've finally found the reason I'm not comfortable," Sydney says after a moment. "I need a footstool. Could you find me one, please?" only in Sydney's voice could politeness sound nothing like politeness. The please only underscores the command that came before it, the slight touch of condescension making it clear that every courteous or genteel moment I have with him is an allowance given only at his pleasure, and I have no right to expect or demand otherwise. That coolly uttered please is like leather stroking down my back. I want to purr. Despite the scatter of plush leather and damask seating around the fireplace, the library is quite bereft of anything that would make a decent footstool. The wooden chairs around the long tables would be too high, and the coffee table nearby would be too low. And even though I knew where this little play was leading the whole time, I still feel a shiver of foreboding and excitement when I think, it'll have to be me. I dressed in jeans and a cardigan today, figuring my nerd casual look would serve the dual purpose of being comfortable and also underscoring the difference in power between me and Sydney in all his restrained polish. I try not to be embarrassed when I again feel the jeans pull tight around my ass and thighs as I get to my knees and lower my head to the ground. I try to remain calm as I curl myself into a serviceable footstool and hear Sydney's murmur of pleasure. The snow has amplified the daylight into startling brightness. Even down on the rug with my head hanging between my shoulders, I can see all the individual twists and fibers, the places under the chairs that a vacuum missed, a forgotten wine cork, the bit of dried cuticle on my left thumb. How strange to see everything with the harsh and rational sobriety of day, and then still to feel a man's shoes settle onto my back, still to feel the heels of them digging into my skin, still to strain against my jeans with a needy erection at the shame of it all. "You're a good footstool, Ryan," Sydney says calmly. I can hear but not see the flipping of papers, the occasional tap of a finger on his iPad as he wakes it up to take notes or snap a quick picture of whatever document he's reading. I wonder if I'm in the pictures. I wonder if you looked hard enough, you'd see the curve of a man's back under the expensive leather of Sydney's shoes. Running after Ash for 4 years, sometimes running with him if he decided he didn't want to exercise alone that day, means I'm not unfit. But the position gets difficult fast. Even on my elbows, the weight of Sydney's legs is enough to start my arms trembling. My cock is pinioned between my hip and my jeans in such a way that even the slightest shift in position is agony. And once Sydney sees I'm suffering, he adds to it for his amusement, pressing down harder with his legs, digging the soles of his shoes deeper into the muscles of my back. We play this game for so long that I have sweat misting my face even in this chilly room, and when he finally lifts his feet off my back, I'm breathing hard enough that my sides are heaving. But I don't get up. Not yet. Not without his express permission. There's already going to be pain today, and while I'm a sucker for pain, there's no sense in bringing more wrath down on my head because I couldn't be patient. "So well trained," Sydney murmurs above me. "I'm envious of whoever got the pleasure of breaking you in. What was their name?"
"Mark," I say. "At a club called Lioness in D.C. He trained Ash as well." Then I shut up, because I'm not so sure it's a good idea to strum the strings of jealousy just now.
"Hmm," Sydney says in that way of his, and then he sighs. "I'm still not comfortable, Ryan."
"I'm sorry to hear that, Mr. Blunt."
"Get on your knees and face me." He lifts his feet, and I do, kneeling between his legs and looking up into his imperious face. I've knelt countless times at the club, in front of Mark or some other dominant willing to play with me, but the difference between kneeling in a dark club and in a bright library is vast. And kneeling in front of someone who I eventually want to eat pizza with, and whose childhood pictures I'd like to see, is also unnerving. If I fail to please him here, what does that mean outside these walls? Would he be so eager for me to come to London and stay with him if I don't satisfy him here now? Sydney's eyes are perceptive and searching my face, and he reaches forward to run a finger along my jaw. I can see the worry in you, he says. His voice is still cool and clipped, but there's something gentle in it too. He's being kind, or at least as kind as he's capable of being. You've already made me very happy. Would you like to see? Yes, Mr. Blunt, I breathe. And he dips his head to his lap in permission. Then look for yourself. I raise my hand, tentative, still not sure if I'm allowed, and run my palm along his thigh. It's the first I've gotten to touch him, and it's like the first bite into an apple, punctured anticipation and the explosion of sweetness after. I could not have imagined it would feel so good to touch him. I could not have imagined the warm sculpture of his firm leg under my hand, or the faint quiver of his body under my touch, proving that he's just as affected by this moment as me. I couldn't have known that brushing one hand up his clothed thigh would be enough to make me shudder. If I weren't already on my knees, I'd be falling to them now. Other than the repressed quiver of his muscles and the finger still toying idly with my jaw, Sydney stays completely still as my hand reaches the thickness currently stretching all the way out to his hip. He stays completely still as I explore the impressive length of him, the swollen crown all plump and distended, the wide base and the convexity of his testicles underneath. He drops his hand to cover mine, moves it to the fly of his trousers. Don't just feel. I told you to look. At where you're happy? At where I'm uncomfortable, he says, arching an eyebrow enough to tell me we're back to business. I unbutton his trousers, wondering how an action that I do several times a day can be so clumsy when I'm doing it with someone else. And then I cease to wonder anything at all as I part his zipper and see his naked, erect cock. It's thicker than I originally thought, and long enough to rest obscenely against the cashmere covering most of his torso. There's a light, masculine fur of hair on his lower belly, and the crisp hair around his root has been kept neat. It's the cock of a calculating and fastidious man, but an arrogant one, too. Even the way it juts up from his groin and beads with pre-cum at the tip seems vain and demanding, just like Sydney himself. If you put your mouth on it, he says, I might feel better. I glance up at him through my lashes just to confirm, and whatever he sees in my face has him fisting his hand in my hair. Fuck, you're pretty, he hisses through his teeth, yanking my face down to his waiting erection. You know what I thought when I first saw those eyelashes, those pretty dark eyes of yours? That I couldn't wait to have you on your knees, just like this, looking up at me through those doll's eyelashes while I fed you my cock. Yes, Mr. Blunt, I moan. And he does as he says, and pushes himself past my lips and into my waiting mouth. I make sure to look up at him, catch his gaze as he rubs himself against my tongue. His eyes are hooded, burning on mine. and if I was nervous earlier about pleasing him, it's all gone now. There can be no doubt that he wants me, that he'll want me again after. I'm even better than the Roman artifacts in the glass cases. He's appraised me, and now he wants to keep me. He's clean, soap-scented, with just the barest trace of salt to his taste. And I moan again as I manage to take him deeper into the tight clench of my throat. "Ah, again," he says, using the fingers twisted into my hair to force the issue. His hips thrust up as he pulls me down, and soon he's fucking my throat with just enough consideration for my breathing that I don't pass out, but not so much care that I don't have tears streaming fast and hard down my face. "Those tears," he grunts, and I know what he sees. I know he sees them glinting on the long fans of my eyelashes. I know the bright sunlight pouring in through the windows must be making them sparkle. "Fuck, Ryan, those tears." And then he comes, pulsing, thick, hot, all down my throat, all while his cruel hand forces me down against him. My own cock throbs in response. It aches. It keens. I think I might be able to come too if I swivel my hips just right to rub my tip against the inside of my jeans. But I don't even get the chance to try because Sydney stands up and hauls me to my feet, even as I'm still swallowing the very last of his spend. He doesn't bother to zip himself up. Instead, he leaves himself exposed, still mostly hard and still wet from my mouth, as he drags me over to the long library table. "Wrists out," he says, in a tone that brooks no argument. Not that I would argue. My wrists are tied quickly, with the expertise of someone who's done it countless times before, and he checks my circulation with the detached efficiency of a nurse. Then my jeans are unbelted, the leather making a slow, sinister hiss as it slides from my loops, and my jeans are unbuttoned and unzipped. Sydney tugs the waist of them down, and my cock hits the cool air, finally free to throb and swell as much as it wants, and I make an involuntary noise when I see his hand move up, like he's going to touch me. "Please, Mr. Blunt," I say when his hand moves away. It's everything I can do not to start crying again. "Please."
"Please what?" he asks indifferently.
He's already turning toward the table, towards the other things he laid out for us today.
"Please, touch me."
"Touch you? You mean touch your cock?"
"Yes, Mr. Blunt."
"And make you come? Is that what you want? That's a very selfish thing to want, by the way."
"I know, Mr. Blunt, but please."
"It does look like it hurts an awful lot," he observes, as he reaches for his leather gloves and starts pulling them on. "Does it? Hurt?"
"Yes," I whimper, my eyes on his hands. "Those gloves. The gloves I asked for last night because it turned me on so much to think about being handled by him while he wore them. It feels like all of the blood in my body has gone to my groin. Like there's a fist at the base of my spine just squeezing and squeezing and squeezing. I'm terrified I'm going to erupt all over myself without even being touched."
"How about this?"
Sydney suggests in a silky voice. He has his gloves on and my belt in one hand.
"Let's trade one hurt for another."
"Oh God, please don't let me come right now. Please let me hold out. Please, please, please."
Sydney hikes up my cardigan so that my entire ass is exposed. The leather glove brushes against the skin at the small of my back, and I shudder.
What color are we on, Ryan? He asks.
Green, I answer. And a second later, the belt stripes leather-thick pain across my ass.
And now? Sydney inquires calmly.
Green.
Another stripe. Another green. After a fourth strike, he stops asking, although he pauses between a couple to give me a moment to speak if I need to. I don't need to. Even though I am crying by the tenth stroke, and my cock is so hard that it hurts too, and everything hurts, and I'm dizzy and breathless. He drapes the belt over a chair and comes to stand behind me.
Still green? He asks gently.
Yes, I mumble.
Green.
A cool leather hand fists my organ, and I gasp, my knees nearly buckling. But Sydney is right behind me, strong and tall and sure, his fully erect cock nestled against my welted ass as he grips me and begins to stroke. I slump against him.
I got you, he says in my ear.
His hand on me is tight and mean and so, so, so good. He jerks me like I need. He jerks me fast and hard and without mercy, jerks me with those leather gloves I've been thinking so many filthy things about. The friction is vicious, and there's a bite to the bliss he's giving me, but I don't even care. I'd rather have this from him than undiluted pleasure from anyone else.
You can come for me, he says.
His cock burns hot and hard against my ass as he grinds himself closer.
You've earned it, haven't you? Haven't you earned it?
Fuck, fuck, I have. I have earned it. It's all I want, to make the people around me happy and better and to earn all the good things I want. My back bows as raw, primal release scissors up from out of me. Something deep in my groin is flexing, pumping, even as my cock flexes and pumps on the outside, spurting seed all over Sydney's fist and onto the table, more and more and more until I'm shaking and drained and everything is incandescent, electric sensation, pleasure, pain, bliss and ache, everything, everything. Sydney's lips are on my neck as I gradually come down. And like the pleasure he gave me earlier, the sweet sensation of his mouth is threaded through with the sting of pain as he nips at my flesh. Then I feel him laughing against me, the vibration of his laughter sending delicious tingles through his lips to my throat. It's the first time I've heard him laugh. What's so funny? I ask, realizing I sound drunk. I also realize I don't care. It feels too good to be like this, warm and beaten against such a stern, handsome man, even if he's not so stern right now.
I came again, he says, still laughing a little. All over you, like an adolescent.
He's right, and now that I'm coming down a little, I can feel it, slick and growing sticky where his pelvis is still slowly grinding against my ass. Don't feel bad, I say, smiling myself.
Why would I feel bad? It was your fault for getting me so worked up.
And with a final bite to my throat, Sydney unties me, and together we go about the business of getting cleaned up.
Welcome back.
Hey, I'm still here.
It is Thursday, so that means we have released, the new release post is updated, so you can go and cruise and find all kinds of new releases to fill your weekend up if you're going to spend it like I am in bed most of the time.
Well, and hopefully our book, Too Many, is live now. If not, should be up tomorrow. If you read the book Too Hard with us, and I know we talked about it on the podcast several times, we're going to talk about it again tomorrow because I can see into the future. But it's the book Too Hard was the guy that was a contractor. He went over to help the girl. She was a lot younger than him, young enough to be his daughter. And she was super attracted to him. And he just thought that he shouldn't do that because she was so young. But then his twin sons, which are his nephews, but he raised them as his sons, they kind of give him a hard time about like how hot she is, just poking at him to get him to make a move. And so eventually he does, obviously. This book that we have coming out today or tomorrow is called Too Many, and it is about the sons. So they get their story now. I know a ton of people have messaged us about this. Good Lord, they messaged us about this. So
finally,
I know, right? I'm surprised too, because it's not normally like our hot ticket item with menages. You know what I mean? Some people really like them. Some people don't. If you don't, that's totally fine. It doesn't have to be in your wheelhouse. But I guess in this particular story, everybody just fell in love with the sons. And so now they get their own story. And it's just, it's really cute. It's sweet. And you guys are going to love it.
We'll see you guys tomorrow with Tessa.
Yeah, we'll be back tomorrow with Tessa. Until then, rate, review, subscribe. It helps us out a lot. And remember to follow us on social media. That's it.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Read me romance. Read me romance. Read me romance. Read me romance. You could take a look in a book, that's fine. Or you could sit back, relax, and unwind and read me romance. Read me romance.